This is
Wow!
What a week.
What a week. Celebrity guest.
Celebrity guest.
Our next guest on Wow, What a Week. Ordinarily, I'd have a massive, elaborate, full of fireworks introduction, but his work speaks for itself. And in a world where everyone says, I can't, ek kani, he's like, I am John Kani. Dr. John Kani, OBE.
O-I-S.
O-I-S.
O-B-E.
Yo. In basic English, what does that mean?
The O-I-S means I got the Order of Ikhamanga.
Oh, yes.
Silver.
Yes.
Awarded to me by President Thabo Mbeki for my role in the struggle for liberation.
Yes, sir.
And through the arts, in pursuit of excellence,
yes,
to secure our democracy, which is non-racial, just, and non-sexist. OBE is what I received last year from King Charles.
King Charles, if you will.
Yes. What actually happened when our president Cyril Ramaphosa was invited by King Charles after the coronation to come to the Buckingham Palace for a gala reception. I received an invitation from Lord Chamberlain, who is the permanent secretary for the royal house, inviting me to attend a gala dinner which is arranged by King Charles III and Queen Consort Camilla for the President of the Republic of South Africa. Now, I thought, okay, I call my friends in government. I said, I've just been invited to go to this gala dinner. But as you know, the royalty has no budget.
Yes, sir.
Although they have billions, but they have no budget. So it is expected that I'm going to fly myself from South Africa with my wife, first class if it's possible, to this event, book a hotel and book a limo to take me there. So I call my government, the Minister of Arts and Culture. Hey, Doc, let's see what we can do. And then he says, okay, I'll put you through to the minister in the presidency to buy this ticket and arrange this trip, because the High Commission of South Africa is in London anyway, in Trafalgar Square. The final answer is, we cannot pay for you. You are not the guest of the Republic of South Africa.
Oh, wow.
You are the guest
of the king.
The king.
Yes, sir.
So, a couple of months later, fast forward, I get another one, brilliant letter, that says that King Charles has honored the choice made by Queen Elizabeth before she passed on to honor me with the officer of the most excellent order of the British Empire, OBE.
Yes, sir.
If I was a British citizen or within those countries that have governor generals like New Zealand, Australia, and Canada, and some of them, they are in the West Indies, that would mean a knighthood.
Oh, yes.
But I'm not a British subject. I'm from a republic, no harm.
So basically, this is, if you're one of us, you'd be a knight.
Yes, if you're one of us, we give you that most excellent. If you're one of us, we'd have given you that. But,
yes, sir.
So, and on the 30th of July, 30th, yes, the High Commissioner of the British here in South Africa will finally receive through diplomatic mail this insignia, which he will pin on my lapel on behalf of King Charles. So that's the OBE for my work and the contribution to the arts globally.
Sure. So when you get a recognition like that, what goes through your mind, sir?
Look, we work for a purpose. You know why you're here. You're not sliding in and sliding out.
Sure.
You stop and you ask yourself, what's my purpose? Why am I here?
Yes, sir.
Well, what am I going to do with my life? What am I going to contribute to the embetterment of our people and society? It starts, of course, with you first.
Yes, sir.
You want to improve yourself. So you work on yourself. You want to make you the number one person, and you want to make sure this person succeeds and becomes the one you see in your mind.
Yes, sir.
And suddenly you have a family. And you know the African sort of myth, practice that the most successful takes supreme responsibility of the family.
You're the breadwinner.
You're the breadwinner. Oh, my father hated that breadwinner in his house. What the hell do you think he is? So then it moves to your little street, your community, to your country, to your people, and suddenly you have a responsibility in the world. So when I'm on my journey, doing my work that I believe in, and someone stops me and says, oh, by the way, for your work, we're going to give you a Tony Award for Best Actor on Broadway. For a moment, you take it in.
Sure.
You think, okay, this is big. But I got work to do because I'm on my way to see the big dog.
Exactly.
So they stop me then the entrance and they give me this award. It is a couple of days later that it sinks in that there was a meeting somewhere and I was not involved and I did not know. And people made a decision that we're going to honor him with this award. I love Best Actor, Best Writer, Best Director because I know what I did.
Sure.
Damn, I'm good at this shit, man.
Yes, sir.
I know what I'm doing. So it's an acknowledgement of the work I've put in.
Yes, sir.
But the awards like Lifetime Achievement, which I have more than 28.
Sure.
Lifetime, I should be dead by now. But those ones like the OBE, like the OIS, like the JF Kennedy Gold Medal,
yes, sir.
Like the... what you call Voices of Freedom, former recipient Nelson Mandela, Albertina Sisulu, Harry Belafonte. I mean, to be on that list.
And Bra John Carney.
And John Carney, and you stop. To be recognized by the Shakespeare Company as the kind of leading actor in Shakespeare with the Pregnell Shakespeare Birthday Award.
Sure.
Those are the ones that make me think, I'm on the right track. I'm serving the purpose of my existence. But they don't give me time to stop and wallow in the adulation and admiration because I'm on my way to have a conversation with the dog this morning. So they can stop me for a second and I move on because if I sit there and think about them, my head's going to be a problem. My cap's not going to fit my head.
You can smell the flowers later.
I'll do that later.
Yes, sir.
So they are absolutely incredible to be acknowledged. As our former Minister of Arts and Culture and Sports used to say, give them their flowers while they can smell them.
Absolutely.
Because it's acknowledging and an incredible thing, especially in the arts constituency and culture. We work like, I don't know in what territory, in what area, but we survive.
Yes, sir.
And then we get so stupid, we get married. And then we have a family. And then we buy a car. And then we buy a house.
Yeah.
And then we buy shoes. You think, you don't have a job, actually.
Yeah.
Why are you doing this?
I'm a freelancer.
I'm a freelancer. We work on that faith.
Yes.
We work on that leap.
The faith of potatoes.
I'm telling you, my brother.
They will grow.
That's what we are as artists.
Yes,
that's why we would not become doctors, lawyers, and dentists, and accountants, because we believe that we're the chosen ones.
But you famously tell the story of how your dad didn't want you to have a regular job.
How would you explain in 1965 to an African conservative traditionalist who believed that he is God? Before you pray to God, you pray to him.
Yes, I'm the breadwinner here.
I'm a breadwinner. And when we sit around the table and my mother says, let's pray for the food. And my mother says, we thank. And my father says, you left me out. I put the food in the thing, in the prayer for the before we eat. He says, you left me out. Now I have to explain to him that I want to be an actor. I want to be an artist.
Sure.
But I have no reference. I can't say like who.
Sure.
I can't say like John Wayne.
You know, the funny thing is, that's exactly the journey I walked, trying to convince my parents that I can play records for a living. And they're like who?
Yes.
I couldn't give them an example. The only examples I had were in America.
Yes, that's the point.
And they didn't know these people.
You don't know these people. So he says to me, come. He had a beautiful shave truck.
Yes.
Beautiful wheels and all that.
Which one?
The old one, 19...
We had the Custom 10. The Chevy Custom 10. 10. Yeah.
Great.
The big one.
The big one.
Could seat five people in front.
Oh, my Lord.
We all in front.
All the kids. But though we chose to step at the back because we wanted the wind in my face.
Yes, sir.
Like riding in Paris in spring. I didn't know Paris then.
Yeah.
So we go to this place. Oh, Linda. This is Sangoma. Lo Mama is sitting there. And Lomama is throwing bones and calling on ancestors. And I realize my father's taken me to a sangom. He thinks I'm mad. And he explains that he's the neighbors. Bamfako mafufunya. They are tokoloshes speaking in his ears. Lomtuana soon is going to be not stable and mad. My father said, Kamak, I know. Because yesterday he saw me walking around the outside the yard, learning my lines in Antigone. So he saw me talking to myself. So it proved to them. But then the sangoma makes a mistake.
Yeah.
Said the community is jealous because he's the breadwinner. Me.
Yes.
My brother said, don't talk rubbish.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to work. Yeah. He's out of jobs. Said, pick up my five rand. So we pick up his five rand. He stops at the shipping spot, said, buy me half a jack there.
Yeah.
And then he gets home, he says to my mother, I don't know what's wrong with him. But he doesn't want to go to work. And my mother said, leave him. I've never seen him so happy.
Exactly.
That has been the testament, the soul of my work, being happy in what I'm doing.
It's weird. I hear you talk about you were taken to a sangoma. When I dropped out of law school, because this is what I wanted to do, an aunt of mine took me to a sangoma from, there was a sangoma from, it was still Pietersburg.
Pietersburg.
Who used to have like a ton of clients in Botswana. And I was sent to the sangoma because they thought I was mad.
Yes.
That why would you leave law school? Why would you leave such a job with honor, prestige, and respect to play records at night? You must be unusual. How, at an emotional level, surely it hurts though that there's even a sangoma intervention being reeled in.
Matsimela Manaka always used to say, when they criticize your work and doubt your work, that sharpens your belief in yourself.
Yes.
That's what it does. You think you don't understand. Now it gives you an added responsibility. You better make it work.
Absolutely.
You better make it work. Because now you don't only have to prove it to yourself. You have to prove it to your family, to your parents, finally to your community.
Failure is not an option.
Absolutely. Failure is not an option. It's never been anyway. The thing then is that, and my father would speak and my mom glowingly about, my brother does this, my sister does this, one is Reverend Kani, one is a teacher, one is doing that. And to explain what John is doing, my father would say, he's always away.
Yeah,
he's always away. He's the one who's always away. When I wrote my first PhD under the guidance and mentorship of, who was this professor I forgot his name now, in Deben Westville University,
yes,
asked me to write this paper about theater and arts in oppressed circumstances of South Africa. He said, write another one, which was post-apartheid, which was 1995.
Yes, sir.
The Senate sent me a letter, and I went to Deben Westville, and I was bestowed upon me a doctorate in humanities. So my mother asked, my neighbors are telling me that you're going to be doctor. Which hospital? now go to explain. Not that kind of a doctor.
I'm not here to, I heal, but not like that.
Not like that.
Yes.
It's an acknowledgement, you know, to put some kind of academic acceptability of what I do, which make them feel a little bit better. It was in 1985. I started in 1965. 20 years later, I come back from New York. And my father is sitting with his friends. I used to buy him the Red Heart rum, you know, the big bottle of 1 liter, which still we didn't have in this country.
Yes, sir.
And so my dad says to his friend, excuse me, this is my son, John Kani. He's an actor. Finally, he found the words with dignity and true belief and admiration to call me an actor.
Wow.
3 months later, I passed on.
Oh, wow.
So that was the gift he gave me.
Yes.
Was finally to acknowledge my journey and what I do. Of course, by 85, I was already very, very successful.
And sometimes that's all we want, regardless of how old we are, how old our parents are. Until they acknowledge you fully, in terms of the journey you took, in terms of me, maybe, in, you know, maybe they saw it as you are being defiant at the time, but the day they recognize it, it's the best thing ever.
It's, people say, what is the highlight in your life and career? I can't think of all the awards, the great movies I've done,
yes,
and the, all the great plays, the plays, the parts I've been around the world. They don't match that moment,
yes,
when I looked into his eyes and he introduced me to his friends. And I knew that my dad truly believed,
yes,
in me and the choices I've made.
Absolutely.
And that was the greatest acknowledgement for me that, that has happened in my career and in my life. It's a very difficult choice we make, you know. Like, I ask my son, I've got 7 children, 4 sons and 3 daughters, and 10 grandchildren. Now, people always want to remind me about Uthandwa,
sure,
because he's an actor.
Yes.
Now, 2003, I'm in New York, I'm on Broadway, at the Lincoln Center. My play then, Nothing But the Truth.
Yes, sir.
I get a call from my wife, says, hey, how are you? And then we talk and we talk and we talk. So now I'm about to go on stage. She says, hold it. Atanda wants to say something to you. He says, Atanda says, Dada, I'm in. I said, where? At Wits University. I said, great, drama. That's exactly what happened. I stopped. He said, that's exactly why I didn't tell you. I said, no. It's great. He said, no, you paused.
Yeah.
You see, because I needed to know, does he see the glitz and glamour, the headlines, the neon lights, the John Carney in, and think I can make it? Does he think because my father has already opened doors, footprints are clear to follow, or does he really believe he's got something to say?
Absolutely.
He's got something to contribute. He truly believes in himself.
Yes, sir.
I said, great condition. Yes, we never talk about it.
We don't talk shop.
You go your own way. When he was doing his final year at Wits, and then they were asked to do research on protest theater. So his friends are working together. They say, let's call your dad. He says, no.
No.
We can't call him.
Unwritten rule.
So what are you talking about?
Yeah.
The man is.
Yeah.
He says, no.
Yeah.
You know what they did? They went to Port Elizabeth to interview Winston John, me.
Oh, wow.
Because that was easier.
Yes, sir.
Then the professor I met, he says, I'm very proud of you. He says, why? The students, including Atandwa, they all messed up. They were so bad in that research, you know, just to I knew you didn't help, because if you did, they would have been on point.
Oh, yes.
So they fumbled. He fumbled like other students. And that has been really our whole relationship with him. Even in the Black Panther, I didn't know he was in the Black Panther. He was in New York.
Yeah.
He went to audition for the younger King T'Chaka. And apparently, you send, because these days you don't audition, you send the tape.
You send the tape.
When they were watching these tapes, the director kept moving, says, that face, says, stop, rewind, that face. He does look like Dr. Carney. And someone said to him, it is his son.
Yes.
That's how he got the job.
Yes, sir. So it's important that your kids must chart their own paths.
It is important that they make their choices.
Yes.
I'm going to intervene. I am going to interfere.
Yes, sir.
I'm going to give an unasked for advice. That's my job as a parent. I'm sorry if you think I'm interfering.
Sure.
Because I'm not going to watch this fool go around the block when I've been there 16 times.
Exactly.
I'm going to keep telling them on the left, on the right. And he says, it's my life. Leave me alone. I'm not going to leave you alone.
Yeah.
Until I see in your eyes that you truly believe and you can see where you're going. Then I ease back. I'm still there as a reference library. Should you want to have a chat with the old man?
Absolutely.
I'm fine about that.
I've walked the journey.
Yeah, I walked the journey. How can I not tell you there's a porthole on the left just before you turn in Oxford Road into...
Sure.
I have to tell you about that porthole. But you won't say, it's my life. Then you call me.
Exactly.
Dad, I got into a porthole. Now my wheel is broken. I says, I told you.
Exactly.
He said, please don't say that. I said, I'm coming. I'm coming. So that's life for me.
Yes, sir.
But I learned someone who said something. about children, they're not going to be what you want them to be. They may not even be what they want to be, but they will be what they will be.
Absolutely. Earlier on, you spoke about coming back in 1985, you said it was. So 1985, I need to tell you a small story before I get to my next question. So 1985, I was in grade 7. So it's the last year of primary school. And then I fell from a trampoline and I dislocated my wrist. And after it had healed, there was still a growth. So I was sent to, my dad found a specialist at Hyde Park. There was a bone specialist in Hyde Park. So we drove to Johannesburg, came to Hyde Park, sorted out my wrist. On our way back, driving through the Northwest, we're driving past the little town of Groot Mariko.
Groot Mariko.
Yes. And then we get stopped by a police car. It's a young Afrikaans officer. He was very rude to my dad. And so this was the first time I saw anyone disrespect my dad at that level. He called him a boy. He asked him, where do you get money to buy a Mercedes Benz? Because at the time, it's the mid-80s.
Yes,
you know, you're driving the 230E, that green, that olive green horrible one. Yes. Or the cream white one. So he asked my dad, where do you get money? Where did you steal this car? Was the question. How can you afford a Mercedes Benz when you're just... And for me, that hurt me so much, seeing my dad hurting like that. So we drove all the way from Groot Mariko to the Botswana border in silence.
Yes.
It was very awkward because, like I said, I'd never seen him disrespected like that. But it also shifted my relationship with my white friends, because growing up, I had friends from everywhere. But the way I started relating to my white friends changed because of that one white officer that was probably almost half of my dad's age, but disrespecting him like that. And for about 3 years, I didn't have any white friends until I started again in high school. Because I was a child, how I processed it was from the mind of a child. But by the time I was in probably, grade 10, I'd reminded myself that there was one officer that does represent everyone else.
Everyone.
But then you do Nothing But the Truth, which deals with a lot of hurt that you've been through. Could we talk about the hurt you've experienced, the humiliation you've experienced, the life-threatening incidences you've had to deal with, the being emasculated because of the color of your skin, but still walking, sir? Could we talk about that?
You have to understand, growing up, I was born in 1943.
Yes, sir.
On the 30th of August. This year I'll be 81.
My dad is turning 82 next week, 83 next week.
God bless his soul. God bless. We need them to be.
Absolutely.
Come, we need the wisdom today.
Absolutely.
You grow up in New Brighton. New Brighton, when I stood in my father's front door, I could see white Port Elizabeth.
Yeah.
Bright lights.
Sure.
Behind
no
me.
No smog.
No.
Yeah.
Behind me was the Port Elizabeth Power Station.
Yes, sir.
That supplies the power and electricity to white Port Elizabeth, Udnik, right up to Craddock. But I could throw a stone into the power station. These questions are coming up to you as an inquisitive mind. And my mom used to say, Lomdana is going to be a problem. He's asking too many questions. He's always, why? Shut up and just do what I'm telling you.
Yeah.
So then you grow up. One of the things that, as black young people, we were aware of, you are never allowed to visit your father at work. Never. My father would say, if the house burned down, it's too late to call me. Did you call the fire department?
Sure.
If somebody's dead, call your aunts and uncles and inform the undertaker. You don't have to come. And I then realized why. Because he did not want me to see him a boy.
Yes.
He's my father.
He was protecting you from...
Yes, from the hurt.
Protecting the image that you probably had of him.
6'6" tall.
In charge.
My father.
Yes.
2 meters wide. That's my image of him. when I was on his shoes, polishing the shoes.
Yes, a giant.
He's a giant. Yes. That's why my son's taller than me. So that was the image. And then we also, with same experience, you driving, and this young little white kid boy with a policeman asked for his passbook. Mm. And I could see him take a deep breath. Mm. My father could gobble him up, could break his neck like a matchstick like that. Mm. But he goes very slowly, gets the passbook, gives him, and puts it in his pocket, and we drive on. Now, the question in me, why are our parents so docile, so submissive? Why didn't they stand up that time he took on that humiliation so that I could be in today in the democratic free South Africa? He took it for me. Right. In 1965, we opened with a play called Antigone. We get arrested because we twisted the play. You're sitting there and they ask questions. And then in 73, we create Sizwe Banzi is Dead with Winston Jona.
That was one of our set books for literature in high school. So I almost feel like I know you sitting here with you.
And then we go, we apply for passports. Winston gets a passport, Arthur gets a passport, I wait. Now there's a problem that my passport is not arriving. And finally it arrives. It's a document for travel purposes. I still have it. Nationality undetermined. The bearer of South African government bears no responsibility for the bearer of this document.
Oh, wow.
So when I go to England, they go through, I have to hustle and understand, and I get kind of explain why this document. Because at that time, my uncle was already on Robben Island, and I have been a couple of times detained for youth activities, even my younger brother. All these things happen. You step back, and you say, I'm not a victim of this.
Sure.
I'm a soldier. Fresh, I've been on the trenches, man. We took chances and did plays that we were arrested. I survived an assassination with 11 stab wounds in my body, left for dead because of instruction to silence this voice.
Didn't you lose an eye?
I did in all that mess. But then what did I expect? I'm in the war. I'm in the trenches. I never was a victim of apartheid. I knew apartheid, discrimination, dehumanizing, and disrespect was part of the things I was a soldier fighting for. So in 1994, I completed that journey. And still strong and still clear in my soul that this soldier played his role. That's all I have. So when people say, how did you feel? How can you be in a fight and ask yourself, how do I feel? There's no time for that luxury because the next body next to you is dropping off. The next brother is disappearing. The next sister has been taken last night. That's what the war was about. And that was the fuel for my art, for my writing, for my concept about performance and creating and being a creative. That was the fuel, the anger, the bitterness, you know. So now in 1994, I got a bit of a wobble. I'm no longer part of the, I'm not in the struggle. I'm also part of the solution. I'm in the solution department.
The war is over.
The war is over. No, I want my war. I want my war because I can't function without this war.
Yes, sir.
Then we had to learn after 1994, what was the new challenge that faces our beautiful country. And that challenge is still being amplified every time they have the stupid sessions of saying we have elections.
Yeah.
And that's when it hurts me most, because that's when I understand how many, many people in this country don't understand the cost paid by us and many others before us and after us that brought us to a point that they could stand in a queue and not vote.
Why do you say a stupid session called elections? Why do you feel that?
Look, let us assume I'm a descendant of great leaders within the Ghani clan,
yes,
Abatem. It is clear by birthright or by character and by signs informed by the ancestors that the next head of the family is. At 80 now, I'm the last of the grandchildren of Hofikile Kani, who is still alive. Therefore, I'm head of the Kani clan.
Yes, sir.
And that Kani clan can go to over 3,000 people. Mm. They even tell me in King Williamstown, Buti, we are having Mkombudi this weekend in appreciation of this. I know, Buti, you're not going to come, Tatom Ning, Tatom Kul, but we just want to let you know.
Yes, sir.
Right. Now, here's a problem. These idiots in the village come together and they have some kind of a discussion. There is a voting system to appoint the leader. How can you vote for a leader? He's not the leader. He lobbies this fool.
Yeah.
He lobbies, as Professor Lumumba says, he's a village idiot. We know he's an idiot.
Exactly.
But he lobbies, making false promises to the people who must vote for him to become a leader. And then I am told, me sitting here, that, okay, now the leader is through voting and lobbying. How can that be a leader? So every 5 years, they have this beautiful theatrical production that seems to tell me that things are going to change.
Yes.
And in that process, the leader is changed. Do you know how many times we've gotten the right leader in and out because of voter lobbying and buying votes? And you want me to sit here and say, this is the new leader. Now, this is the new head of the pack.
Sure.
That we deal with. And also for me, it's absolutely, the elections are over now. So what's the next job of the leaders and politicians to make sure that we get re-elected? Before the list of the things they promised to address.
Exactly.
We have to guarantee that my party wins the next elections. The one at the local elections and the other one national another 5 years later. So the whole process is make sure we get re-elected.
Ah, yes.
You understand?
That's the goal.
That's the goal.
The goal is not to deliver services.
Oh, no, no. As you sit in the office being a councillor, make sure that you are the next councillor after
exactly.
5 years.
Exactly.
Because what are you going to do afterwards? Right. So I call it a theatrical event, both beautiful production that is colorful and incredible. But at the end of it, I ask myself, what was this play about? I'm not clear what the play was about, but it was a great production.
Sure. What did Nothing But the Truth do for you, sir, at a healing level?
I wrote the play in 1985, 3 weeks after I buried my father. My brother was shot. He was the poet of the revolution. He was much more absolutely far left than me. In fact, he even questioned, why would I work with white people?
Oh, yes.
He questioned that. He said, the problem with it, you're going to be confused when the revolution comes. We can't be consulting you, is that white man good or not? We're just going to kill them all, including your friends. And also, it might dilute your focus in understanding why the black man is on his own, why the black man must free himself. So he was that kind of a poet. And my mother was still in black clothes of mourning.
Oh, yes.
I had to go tell my mom with my brother, Owelile, Reverend Kani, that my brother passed away. He's been shot about 2 hours ago. My mother just looked at me, says, you got bad news. I said, yes. My brother's been shot. My mother said, I expected it. I thought, what are you talking about? Your father is a huge tree. When it falls on young siblings. And your father needed someone to announce his arrival to the ancestors.
Wow.
I did not question her understanding of it, but I knew them white people killed my brother.
Exactly.
So that anger stayed with me. And there I go and become part of the kind of truth and reconciliation process. I could tell you why we need this process, truth and TRC, but the point I can tell myself, I couldn't ask myself, do you forgive? So I wrote Nothing But the Truth to answer the question, do you forgive? The answer was simply, it's work in progress. It's a process. It's a process. Because at 80 years old, I was 51 years old when I voted in 1994. I've got more memories of the horror of the apartheid than the memories of the post-apartheid era. When I sleep at night, I don't dream at elections and rallies. I dream running. They're catching up. I dream falling. I still dream those nightmares, right? So when I wrote Nothing But the Truth, at the end of it, I remember the first performance was on the 4th of July in Grahamstown for students, mixed students, black and white. And the tears and the snifflings on those kids, I stopped. It felt like a weight off my shoulders. And on my way back to Johannesburg, I went to Port Elizabeth. I went to the cemetery and I stood next to my brother's grave and I said, I'm not angry anymore. I'm actually proud of you and your peers and all those that paid the ultimate price. I had it with a smile. I handled it. So that's why I wrote Nothing But the Truth, to deal with me, to ask me the question, what was the process? Because in as you see in Nothing But the Truth, I say that why do we organize that they should come to us and ask us to forgive them? They did not organize this process. So before I say, yes, I'm considering forgiving you, could you tell me what you did? If you don't, I will liberate your conscience. Your conscience. I'm not going to hold you up by saying, if he could forgive me, I forgive. Now, go on with your life, and I hope you do better. And I'm going to go on with my life.
I'm freeing you.
I'm freeing you so that I could be free of wasting my time thinking about you, or how I'm going to kill you, or how I'm going to revenge, or whatever. I'm done with that. So all my work, even sometimes in the choice of movies, plays, television that I do, even the latest play, Kunene and the King, still kind of like my journey. And I was talking to young people just up in the theater who are want to be writers and creators. I says, it's your truth.
Yes.
It's your journey. You can only tell the story because the beginning of it is with you and in you. You can't tell a story or write a play from the memory of other people's works. It has to be honest. Because when I tell my story, I don't care whether you like it or not. I don't care whether it's award-winning or not. That's not my point anymore. Actually, I have no time for your opinion about me, because I know who I am.
Absolutely.
I couldn't have spent 80 years trying to find out who the hell I am. So I have no option, no sympathy for your ignorance.
So when you look at, for instance, Nothing But the Truth and why you did it, and then we look at days like Day of Reconciliation, and as many people often argue, how is it a day of reconciliation when there's only one hand extended? And who are you reconciling with that has admitted that maybe they've done wrong? Who are you reconciling with that maybe acknowledges that I might have personally done nothing wrong, but the privilege that I've accrued as a result of that which was wrong done to you is why I'm here and why I see a reason to also extend my hand. Where were you reconciling with, sir?
When I was in England 2 years ago, I appeared in the program Hard Talk. And he asked exactly that question, because in the play, Kunene and the King, my latest play, there is my character line asked the white actor that I don't think you even went to the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, being a white person. The answer is, why should I? There was nothing that I had to be forgiven for. I didn't do anything to your people. That still is the burning question among many South Africans, especially white South Africans in this country, not knowing that they were part, willingly or unwillingly, conscious or non-conscious, of that era of the oppression of black people just by being who they are. And now they say, of course, I worked hard for what I have. Oh, yes, on the back of my grandfather's back.
Absolutely.
The lashes are still raw. I can seal this pain in my dreams when I close my eyes. So when you have a day of reconciliation, when you have a Heritage Day, when you have a Youth Day, when you have a Women's Day, when a Human Rights Day, it is again the generosity of the African and African spirit and humanity, which sometimes drives me crazy. How are we so nice? How are we moving on? Because we have a new responsibility of about 60 million people that want the definition of democracy make sense to them when they have a house bread, a job, access to health, access to schools and education, access to work. So that's your primary objective now, to wallow on the fact that these are people who have not moved an inch towards true reconciliation is going to derail your service to your people. Absolutely. Not that you've forgotten it. Oh, it's there. Oh, it's like rubbing a sore and you scratch it so hard that it bleeds again. It's therapeutic to think about pain sometimes, as long as you don't wallow in it and make it a new wound. But that place must always be reference. So you look at it today and you say, it's okay. I love what young people are doing. I can see a new spirit emerging. And one day, I hate what young people are doing. I don't know where the hell, where the hell are they going?
Exactly.
You look at television today, I'm sitting there. Yeah. Have you seen the youth adverts?
Yeah.
Do you see the colors? Yellow, bright blue, even walls are painted. These young people are happy. Sure. It drives me crazy, that happy thing, because 60% of them are unemployed. What the hell are you talking happy about? 60% of them didn't complete school. Over 70% of them are wallowing in the townships. But in this South African advert industry, there's a false impression of a happy youth. Today, like, for instance, I'm driving here. Somebody says congratulations to Tyler and Makadzi for the BET Awards.
Yes, sir.
And we were talking, I was in Minnesota with some of the brothers from Africa, Sheriff Keita, who is the uncle of Salif, and the other brothers from Botswana. And we were saying, we hate this kind of boxing Africa into the international category.
It's almost like an affirmative action category.
It's affirmative action.
It's like shame. Let's bring them in.
Let's bring them in. Yeah. If Tyler wins the best new artist, why didn't she compete with Beyonce, Rihanna, and win or lose there?
Yeah.
Why does must be this? You put it so beautiful. I'm going to quote you. The affirmative action slot. Let's bring them in.
Let's have a remedial class.
Yes, that's there. So why? And I had something that Makadzi had to borrow money.
To travel.
To go to the BET. And that's why I told you the story. That I couldn't go to the gala night at Buckingham Palace. I'm John Carney, for crying aloud.
We should be rowing a boat with you in it to England.
I should have a red carpet at O.R. Tambo on arrival. Met by the minister and the president.
Absolutely.
I told the president, incidentally, on Peter Magubane's funeral, that you have the veterans and they have a stipend per month for their contribution. Can I remind you, sir, we were together with those veterans in the struggle.
Absolutely.
We also died and buried our own brothers in that struggle. So you should think, how do you recognize and absolutely acknowledge the role played by the artists in the liberation of this country? You didn't call a meeting at Wembley Stadium. It was the artists that were there with you, Miriam, Kaifos and all, that had nearly 500,000 people in Central Park West. We were the people with our plays that changed the mindset and the thinking and the narrative about what apartheid is in South Africa. We were the people who talked cultural boycott and moved the program of disinvestment and ultimately ended. Why are you only using us since Yanqoba rallies?
Exactly.
And then there you be paid and then we get out. And when you sit in parliament and you structure your cabinet, you look around, oh, by the way, there's a portfolio we haven't given it to someone else. What is it? Sports, arts, and culture. Oh, God, who's left? And the person who is left gets that portfolio and they think they've been demoted. How are you going to advance?
And they've had nothing to do with sport, arts, or culture.
Okay, for the first time, I'm going to use the word no comment.
Ladies and gentlemen, let the record show that for the first time in his entire career, Dr. John Carney is speechless.
I said no comment. No comment. I'm just praying and waiting to be surprised.
Yes,
I'm leaving that little window that I could be surprised.
Yeah, hope like potatoes.
That's what kept us all, just hope.
What are your thoughts on this drama we just went through with the elections and the results and the GNU and the impasses. I don't think you've ever been in a production more dramatic than this.
No, not at all. I've never done a movie like this. At least in a movie, we know there's the script. We get to get the director, the producers.
Exactly.
We sit around and we just execute to the best of our ability. And the movie makes a lot of money and we get paid.
Exactly.
And then we move on.
Yeah.
This is the sign of the times.
What are those times?
In any war, there are two sides. This side, we are the fighting for honor and liberation and for our survival.
Yes, sir.
The other side, they're exactly driven by the same mandates. So the winning side tells the other side, you're terrorists, you were wrong. Now, when the winning side, that because they are now in government, they must not forget. They did not defeat the enemy. We came to an arrangement. That arrangement is dogging South Africa and its democracy. I think it's going to do it for a hell of a long time. Until we get to a point where we say some of the things we agreed to need to be reviewed.
They don't work for us anymore.
No, they don't work for us anymore. We were in a corner then, pressed by Davos, pressed by our international relations and diplomatic this, to come to a solution. Yes, we saved a lot of lives by 1994, but I think...
Is it serving us now? That's the question.
No, it's not, because these decisions have not been constantly reviewed. I mean, even in a company, a company that takes Indaba break, where they look at the principles that they had before and review them and still hold on, look at marketing strategies, look at how do you place your company in the new financial AI world. We haven't done that with our liberation. We're just stuck in a time where it worked and it was the best solution for 1994. Is it now the best solution for 2024, 30 years later, that we absolutely a carbon copy photo start? We repeat the challenges that we had in 1994. That amazes me and confuses me that no one realized that we back where we started, like deja vu.
I was going to say, you'd think by now the comrades would have learned from the Nats what not to repeat.
History is the worst teacher.
Because it repeats itself. It's the worst teacher. It repeats itself.
People don't learn.
Yeah.
Now, people always think that they are dealing with the present.
Yes, sir.
But there is no present without reference to the past.
Absolutely.
And those two, present and past, will form in your mind where we're going in the future.
Yes, sir.
So you can't make decisions that... simply because of the past, but we have to look ahead. So sometimes I get so, I got nothing to do with it. Let the hell it go on. I will only react when politics stands as an obstacle in my journey towards success.
Yes, sir.
And people say, I'm a political actor. I've never been. You told me I can't do that. And I hate that. I did it because you told me I can't do that. If you left me alone, I would never even talk what you call politics.
I might have done something different.
No, my God, I might have been a lawyer, which I really wanted to be. And my father said, what lawyer? I said, human rights. He said, no, go find something else. I said, why? I'm not going to bury you now. That was in the 60s. So, but you look in it in a positive way.
Yes, sir.
We're not in a civil war situation. We're not DRC. We are not Central Republic of Africa. We are not Sudan, Khartoum. We are not these countries. Because somehow we have been able to hold our country, our people together. There's a lot of goodwill and an incredible feeling of doing the right thing among the people of South Africa. But now we are learning that government is another little department, but the biggest department is the will of the people.
Absolutely.
It is these structures that are civic organization, most important, It's the business that must create jobs, that must create wealth, that must empower our people, give the people the dignity of work, the opportunity to succeed in pursuit of success and happiness.
No,
not government.
And no one in their right mind wants a grant. I want to work for my money. I want the dignity of saying, the roof over my head, I built myself.
I want to be rich. I don't want to just make it.
Exactly.
I just want to be rich.
Yes.
Because when I'm rich, I will take care of the others behind me.
Absolutely.
I can't work for making it. You know, by the 22nd of the month, I'm freaking out.
Yes.
The day called payday used to drive my father so the Murren used to be very angry. He's got paid because he knows it's finished before he takes it out of his pay packet.
Exactly.
He knows he owes more than what is in his pay packet. I can't live that life fresh. I cannot do that. I have to be in a position of bloody wealth.
Absolutely.
I did not become an artist because I just want to do the art because it's the love of the art. Oh, no, no. I came into this and I found out that passion for the arts is very a little component of what's happening in the West End, in Broadway, and in Hollywood. There, it's business.
Absolutely.
Or we make money, and that's all we're there for.
There's more business than there's show.
No,
other territories.
You can see, even look at the words written. The word show is smaller than the word business before you call it show business. It's work. It's like owning a department store. It's like owning a supermarket, like being shares in the market.
It's life-changing work.
Yes, it is.
It's not living hand-to-mouth work.
Oh, no, not at all.
Yeah.
Look, the stories we tell, the work we do may impact to us to sort of add, contribute to social cohesion, to nation building, to those big words of government, reconciliation, diversity, and redress. It may national heritage, national identity, it may contribute to that unintentionally so, but because the work you do and the choices you make are basically your choices.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. So we are out of time.
Good.
As I would have expected, because there's no way we can sit down and talk and use the time allocated. But before you leave, I know you get paid a lot of money to do things like this.
Please do.
I know you get
what
paid.
You're going to ask me now.
I want to ask you to do a bit of work, sir.
Okay.
It's one of my favorite songs, and it's a song I believe is what should be one of your anthems, because I firmly believe the world is yours. Looking at the work you've put in, the sacrifices you've made, the blood you've spilt literally and figuratively, the path that you've charted for millions of others on this continent. I firmly believe the world is yours. So I want to ask you, sir, to do a dramatic reading of AKA's The World Is Yours. Our budget is, we can offer you good coffee.
I hope my agent does not hear this. She will freak out because she needs the 10% on the millions.
So no, tell your agent that we'll send her 10% of the coffee beans we use to make you the coffee so that you're both getting paid.
Oh, fresh.
So there you are, sir. There are the lyrics.
Do I only do the areas you've marked?
No. You can do the whole thing.
Okay.
You can do the whole page.
I like this young man.
May his soul rest in peace. Yes, sir. So, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. John Kani, in a dramatic reading of AKA, The World Is Yours.
I met him once and he said, "Hi, Uncle John. When a young person understands the African culture,
yes, sir,
structures, and not say to me, hi, John,
yes,
makes me think there's something in that little person."
Absolutely.
So when he passed on, it was quite a blow that, why, come on, why? Right. The world is yours. You played it safe. I raised the bar. Amazing grace, I praise the Lord, Versace store. The world is yours. Monate so, monate so. Paparazzi wanna funk with hopey, with happy ho. The shwashi in the cult with the camera phone. Every time we're in the club, it's family show. Take the trophy home. We are the champions. Champions, champions, champions. Always knew you'd be in the top again. Super mega he on the top again. Couple dollars in the cut for the ambience. But you wouldn't. About to call you a Maxi Ho. It's a classic night, Friday action night, paid the price for everything that we sacrifice. For the bragging rights, I deserve this life. It's a perfect time to keep for my circle tight, funk in the flashing lights, funk the plastic life. What's the verdict when I pull up at the traffic lights? Oh, we got the juice? Who got the juice? Somebody make me an offer. I can't refuse.
Ladies and gentlemen, a dramatic reading of AKA's The World Is Yours by the one, the only, Dr. John Gani. Sir, thank you, thank you, thank you. The world is yours. And we're hoping that even at 100 years old, they'll find roles for you.
Oh, I'll be here.
Because art is supposed to reflect life, and life has 100 year olds. So when you're 100, sir, we'll be with you watching you collect that statue at the Oscars.
We still do the podcast with a much older friend who needs to prompting more than me and who tries to remind me about 30 years ago, only 80, 20 years ago. Do you remember? Says, I do remember you, Fred.
Yes.
He said, that young man is the voice. I miss the drive home with you when I come from meetings of useless board meetings and I'm driving through traffic at about 4 o'clock and I hear the big dog and I'm thinking, there's no traffic. The world, the road is clear. But now I hear you and I listening to him on podcast and I'm saying, they can't silence that voice.
Yes, sir.
Nor could they take the memory of AKA out of the memory bank of the arts constituency and landscape.
Amen. The good doctor, we appreciate you, we love you, and thank you very much.
Thank you, my brother, to have this wonderful conversation. You owe me the coffee.
Yes, the coffee, but we're going to have to minus the 10%.
Well, my age is going to kill me.
I find it weird, sir, when you call me my brother, because for me, you're like my father. And it feels weird, but it also feels good that I've made that circle of people that you call your brother. I don't know if I'm making sense.
In the African tradition, when there is a cultural event,
yes,
sir.
Sure.
Right. And then you start there with the young ones that just become men yesterday.
Yes, sir.
Then you move to the other section, Amadodan, meaning that these are the people that we recognize in our community as young people. Then you move to Amahlakani, that is our brothers, right? We sitting here as the elders keep promoting you.
Ah.
We watch your journey. We watch your role within the community. We watch your vision. And then you suddenly, some of us get much faster than the others. So now we have promoted you to say, my brother, but you still refer to me as my elder.
Absolutely.
You can't call me my brother.
I can't do that.
I can call you my brother.
Yes, sir.
It's a sort of a badge of honor, mark your progress within the crawl.
Ah, yes.
Not necessarily that Zichegu Nyegwedi.
Exactly.
I was there before.
I must still know my place.
Oh, you still know your place.
You know, sir, what I admire about you the most is how you're such a great storyteller. Does Ma ever just ask you for a cup of tea when you're home? And you turn that into a whole story.
Oh, no. I get reminded all the time, you're not on your stage. The challenge is sometimes I'm really talking to my children and I'm really angry.
Yes,
they're laughing. They're marveling at my performance. I'm thinking, I'm not performing. I'm pissed off. I'm not performing. And then as I walk out, and my wife says, "Yamazu tate, man.
Yeah, we are act.
Yamazu tate, man." And I love it now because I can say whatever I want to to you.
You've earned
it. I've earned it. And you could say, "Oh, he's senile. You know, Tata talks too much." No.
Yeah.
I said exactly what I want to say. And I know the excuse is going to be, "Utata mdalam and me again." No.
Yeah.
I know what I have to say.
And I know what I said.
When my father said to me, when I did something wrong, I'll get that belt and whip your ass. It will hurt you more than it hurt me, more than it will hurt you.
Mm.
I knew I wasn't going to be punished that day.
Oh, yes.
But when my father says, "Hey," I knew I'm in trouble.
Yeah.
He doesn't say, "Oh, how he's going to kill me." He just says, "Hey."
Hey.
I knew I'm in trouble.
Yeah.
So I do have that structure in my mind when I talk to my family, that I can now separate the artist, the performer, the writer, and play the role of the father and say, "Hey." And my kid says, "Leave him alone. He's not in a good mood. Let's move." But thank you for our conversation.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. John Gani.
OISOBE.
OISOBE.
I earned it.
ASAP. OMG. And we have another one in the bag. Thank you, as always, for being a part of the Wow Magic. Don't forget to subscribe, to like, to share. And most importantly, please give us your opinions, what you like, what you don't like, what would you like to see more of and less of. Coming to you from AMP Studios, downtown Johannesburg, we are part of the Africa Podcast Network. Email us at waw@africapodcastnetwork.com. Shout out to Trevor and his crew at Pezulu Works. They do all of the cinematography. They make us look good. When we do look good, if we look bad, it must be something else. And Otis the Flo Fraser for all of the imaging. And of course, the boss lady, our executive producer, Kelezo Mutisakeng. Till next week, take care of yourselves and have a wow week in spite of yourselves.